Any questions? No? Yes. Should you get a haircut? No, it's too late. Next question.
In terms of the Swedish tumor, how do you apply that to mixed tissues with some people?
So what Avishai is talking about is the Shri Deish is true, I assume, that says that youth groups that are trying to be Makarev people can b'dieved rely on a reality of boys and girls singing together in a situation where the voices are not discernible without solos and where they're singing Shirei Kodesh, because we assume in that kind of atmosphere people are not going to be, He himself presents it as a dochek, something b'dieved, etc. So obviously it's not ideal. In many situations today, movements feel the only way they can attract people and boys and girls together is, under those circumstances. And I think people can rely on the Shri Deish when you are relying on what he said. To have girls sing alone, that's not relying on what the Shri Deish said because he didn't say that. Having songs that are not Shirei Kedusha sung is not what he said because he didn't say that. One can claim that on their own, but that's not what the Shri Deish said, right? The Shri Deish said that under circumstances where they're singing Shirei Kodesh together in a way that the voices are not discernible, B'dieved, you can rely upon it for Kirov. Okay, that's what he said. Yeah.
When you say it on their own... I mean, just girls on their own, or even if it's a lot of girls?
Meaning not a single voice on their own. Right, a lot of girls together would also be okay.
So even if it's five girls and boys on?
Assuming the voices are not discernible. Yes, Natano.
Within the same context of the same question.
Natano's asking the question. We want to thank him for helping the staff beat the students. I didn't want to mention that for us, just to thank Natano. Yes. 11-5.
Yeah.
My Targan had a goal.
It is.
Staff team is so strong, you might argue. Son has 3 goals. Yes, okay. Yes. enough of that, says Max Hitler. Yes.
What would you define as Kirov in terms of that?
In a situation where you feel that keeping people, growing in a strong religious way, like NCSY or Bnei Akiva, those things, it may not be bringing people who are not from, but it's raising people from. That's also Kirov. Yes.
You count a man who believes the Rebbe was Mashiach for
Armenian. I think so. Meaning, the real question you're asking is it possible? Well, I mean, you're asking more than that. Is it possible to believe that someone who, is it possible to believe that someone who's dead is a Mashiach? Well, some people believe he didn't die. You can disagree with that, but that isn't a faith problem. That's a Matthias probably died. Didn't die, right? No, you understand my point? My point is, a person might be a tippish, right? But, it's not a Muna question. a number of years ago, right after the whole, the Rebbe was buried, and, all these issues began, someone wrote a whole book about how Chabad is dangerous, and clearly the Rebbe, the person who passed away can't be Mashiach. And it was a Chabad person who wrote a whole response with a lot of other sources. See, part of the problem is that issues like this are not clear-cut. Meaning, what's Kneva Gzela's clear-cut? Arba of us Nezikin, well, it's Machlokis, but you know what I'm saying? Meaning, in the end, these kind of issues are not clearly written about in a bona fide way. We have the generally accepted opinions. As one professor of Jewish history said, what separated the Jews from the Christians throughout all the years was the belief that the Mashiach can't die. What does that do to us versus the Christians, right? Okay, but that doesn't make it right or wrong opinion. And that is definitely part of the reason it became accepted that Mashiach won't die. There's a famous story they tell about Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim was on a train and he saw a missionary picking on some simple Jew trying to missionize him. So Reb Chaim said, don't talk to him, come talk to me. So the missionary said, okay. Why don't you accept Yashka as Mashiach? He said, because the Chachamim didn't accept him. So he said, well, Chachamim can make mistakes. He said, well, where did they make a mistake? They accepted Bar Kokhba as the Mashiach. And Reb Chaim said, how do you know they were wrong? He said, because Bar Kokhba died, Reb Chaim said. The only stories they tell over in the Jewish world are the ones where Reb Chaim wins. But my point is, okay, well, that was always the argument we used. But that doesn't make the argument impossible. Right? So my point is,
in the fold, out of the fold, right, wrong, when you deal with these issues, is a very hard thing to define. And there are a lot of midrashim that say different things, etc. So one question is, what's right, and how clear is it, and to what extent did Kari Amuna start counting people, not counting people as binyanim? I know there are abundant, you know, etc. I would encourage us to, you know what we know, learn what we need to learn, try and respect Jews.
Okay, so at what point does a person become invalid?
If a person doesn't, you know, believe in God, so the words he says, you know, about Baruch Atah Hashem, etc., are hollow. If a person believes in God, I think you can be makel under those circumstances, you know. Yeah?
If you know someone's not going to answer,
You should encourage them to answer. And stand next to them, help them answer. If in the end they don't answer, so okay, you know what I'm saying? But you're not sure they're not going to answer, you're trying to get them to answer, right?
If you know from the answer, then you're just going to sit there and not.
What do you mean, they can't speak? They don't have a mouth?
You know they're going to refuse to.
Refuse, you shouldn't count them. What?
They can listen and play on their phone, for example.
Okay, a lot of people who are very firm do that, you know what I'm saying? You know, yeah.
When you get the commandment to have a king, it's sort of very, but yeah, it's like when you complain and want to be like the good.
What's the question part?
The question part is why do we daven for a king?
The reason I want to hear what the question part was is because the first part is a machloket. To what extent appointing a king is an ideal or not? It's not talking about, there are many who hold that it's not an ideal.
Even in like Sefer Shmuel, like when Shmuel wants to, like, he's like. Yells at the people, like, why do you
there are a lot of different sources. One day in the Gemara says that what bothered Shmuel was the timing and goal of the king as opposed to the nature of the king. One thing is for sure, whatever your backdrop feelings are about to what extent the kingship is ideal or not, in the end, Malchut Beit David is seen as something good. It could be the king was the ideal for him. I don't know how you ask. Whether once Malchut Beit David came into existence, it was something good that became the model of how, you know, Jewish government should work. So, okay, there's the question of what would have been, could have been, should have been, might have been, and then there's the question of what should be today. Yeah?
Assuming someone who's Jewish is going to be marrying a woman who's not Jewish, would it be, assuming you had a choice in the matter, but this was the constraint, would it be better if she got a conversion through a not Orthodox at all, or if she just acknowledged she wasn't Jewish and her kids weren't Jewish?
First of all, I know you didn't mean it this way, but a Jew can't marry a non-Jew. What you meant is they think they're getting married
legally,
etc. Meaning state marriage. It's not legal. It's legal state, right? Okay. There are a lot of questions that come up regarding that. Part of the issue with conversions that are not real is that people think they are real, and that's part of the problem. I think most would say that you should not encourage someone to do something that's not real. Now, it could be there's a conversion that's not ideal, right? There's certain conversions like that, right? That obviously would be better than no conversion. You also have the question like this: when a person is converting only out to marry, so what kind of conversion is that in the first place, even if it's done in front of a bezdin and everyone and everything? Okay, so there's a difference between a conversion that's not ideal and a conversion that's just fictitious, that someone's going to think it's real. And then the other question is, to what extent do we seem to be giving credence to something when we're telling you how to do it? So if the conversion is a spurious one, I think you should not encourage it. If it's b'di'eved, it's a better that, at least. Yeah.
And something a bit differently. Assuming there's no outside encouragement, she's going to be converting anyways through this.
That way. So what's the question?
Would it be okay to encourage? Would it be better to encourage her not to convert at all? And her kids have any idea?
Again, you also have to realize what sway you have over them. If you have enough sway that you can encourage them to convert properly, right? So if you don't have that, I think I would stay out of it. Yeah, and wait for a time when I can say something. Yeah.
So what is just, I don't know, what's the why don't we accept
conservative conversions.
But they're not real. It's not a matter of us accepting or not. Conversion has halachas. Part of the halachas of conversion is that you commit yourself to mitzvahs. It's not conservative, not conservative. A person's not committing themselves to mitzvahs. And I don't want to get into most conservative people themselves don't do mitzvahs. The rabbis don't do all the mitzvahs. I'm not talking about you choose mitzvahs. That's not committing yourself to mitzvahs. So what are they committing themselves to? That doesn't matter who, what institution gave the person smicha that hangs on their wall. I'm talking about the content of the thing. A person could be a Rosh Hashiva from Demir Yeshiva. If they're doing it wrong, it's not right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
I recently listened to Shira Mayu Torah, and there was a panel of modern Orthodox Reform and Conservative Rabbi.
Yeah.
And I was shocked hearing some of the things that the Reform and Conservative Rabbi said, like, in terms of most of our congregants don't believe in God, how to convert someone if they don't believe in God or mitzvot, just that, and how they wanted to, like...
I'm happy that you're shocked. I'm happy that you're shocked. You shouldn't have to know, you know, what goes on out there, but it's crazy.
So
you know.
My question is when we're davening, when we're saying in our Shemoneh Shev, Olam HaShem, are we supposed to be davening for people like that who Dafka want to kind of change their religion? They say we think that...
Well, there's a difference between rabbis who are dealing with difficult situations, maybe improperly, and those who are going out seeking to change religion. You understand what I'm trying to say? Shachta said something here, right? The Brach V'Lam Al-Shinim was instituted against, you know, Christian sects who were, you know, aggressively trying to change the nature of what is Judaism. I think for better or for worse, most Reform and Conservative rabbis are not trying to change, they're just trying to keep up with people who aren't from. I don't think, you know, one day a Reform rabbi stood up and said, I think gay people should get married. I think they have congregants who want to be married, who wisely or unwisely, they're trying to keep involved, and they're making the rules flexible to keep people involved, which I think is terrible. But I don't think they're, today, don't think they're changing their religion. And B, I think more and more and quickly, Orthodox world, I don't want to say the Orthodox world, the Jewish world is not under siege from conservative and reform. They're dying movements. I mean, most of the people are conservative and reform, etc., but they're not people who are actively Jewish. I don't think they need to be combated. I think they should be brought in, and we should try and be makar of them. Understand what I'm saying? And if people's mindset is the demonization, I think we have to be careful not to give credence to all the things we're talking about, etc., but we should be trying to bring people in. Yeah.
There's a general consensus among language experts that both the Yeshivish and the Ashkenazic modern Orthodox kind of community have correct pronunciations for the vowel. But in terms of the Hasidic community, you pronounce it Elokaini.
What's the question?
Aleph.
Yeah, I'm familiar, yeah.
Most people agree that there's no basis in the Torah in terms of somebody made it up at one point in time and then it was spread. So if we know that a pronunciation...
There definitely is a basis in Masorah. People have their traditions, and traditions are very holy. And what language experts think is irrelevant. It's irrelevant if there's no tradition. We have to set it. Minig is everything that we keep as a people. And when you say most people agree, I assume most Hasidim do not agree. You meant most linguist experts. People consider themselves experts agree, and that's not relevant. You have your Masorah, you have your Minog. When a minig is against the halacha, you know what I'm saying, right? You have the Shulchan Aruch, and someone starts a minig which is against the Shulchan Aruch, the minig is a toast. Things develop, and I assume that the Gedolim who were around in those times knew what was going on, and could have and would have stopped it if they would have felt it was the wrong thing, and they didn't. Why they didn't, I don't know. But I'm humble, and I don't know. I say I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah.
When are you allowed to diverge from your fathers or your families, I guess, or in, or in, I guess,
why would you?
Huh?
Why would you diverge?
If you depending on where you live.
No, I'm not following. Why would a person need to diverge from their minog?
Maybe you move somewhere.
Ah, do you mean when a person moves to Eretz Yisrael and people here speak Sfaradit? So can you, is that the question you're asking?
Yeah, yeah.
So in those circumstances, a person can say that their minog is based on the place where they are and the community they live in, and now they're going to a different world. And in this world, it's the minog ha-makom, etc., I would ask my father, because the father ultimately is the bearer of the minhagim.
Is there a general minhagim welcome here as to...
In Eretz Yisrael?
In terms of pronunciation and...
I think everyone in Eretz Yisrael speaks... Oh, in davening. Well, then the question becomes, if you're speaking Sfaradit in general, there are some people who want to speak differently because they want to distinguish between the Hebrew they're using in Chol and the Hebrew they're using in Tefillah. But if a person feels that this is the Hebrew they're speaking, they want to be consistent, I think there's legitimacy to that. I'll just ask my father because my father gave it over him, right? Yeah.
How do you view Rav Saul Lieberman?
How do you view him? What's the question? Explain to me the question. You want me to, he was a very big Talmud Chacham, who himself was a firm Jew.
Right.
You know, explain to me more what you mean.
How do you view his decision?
His decision to work in the seminary?
Yeah.
What?
That needs context.
Rav Shaul Lieberman was a very big Talmud Chacham who came to America, I think after World War II, and was looking for a job. There were many Rabbanim from Europe looking for a job. And he got a job in the Conservative Seminary, JTS. And he wrote a really master work called the Tosefta Kapshuta, the most important work we have in the Tosefta. He wrote other books which are a product of a study of the interface of Judaism and Greek culture. He was a huge Talmud Chacham in general also. He was a very firm person. He was a, you know, totally a fine Jew who broke with the seminary when they decided to give smicha to women. That's just the historical side of it. The world was very different in those times. The conservative movement was initially started as a response to reform and to be a more frum version. You know, think about it in retrospect. In many ways, what was going on in JTS in those years was better than what was going on in some Orthodox institutions. He definitely was miskaven l'tov. And what a person's view was while he was alive and teaching there is one question. And I think that that's more or less irrelevant today. In retrospect, we should remember him as a big Talmud Chacham who tried his best to teach Torah, and we should benefit from his farm. Yeah.
From my understanding, Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach has become very popular in the last 10-20 years. Why wasn't it so?
I think Jews were less able to try to influence the world. You know, you're closed in ghettos, etc. There also have been movements over the last years for various reasons, you know, to push it. Chabad has pushed it very strongly. There have been some Goyim who have reawoken to it. They have a lot to do with things going on in the Goyish world that have caused it to be a reawoken. Societal issue.
So would you say that that's, that should be encouraged over conversion as a general rule?
We don't encourage conversion. We are,
I mean,
do more than encourage Sheva Mitzvah.
Conversion.
We try to discourage them to convert. For sure, absolutely. Just have a question. We try to encourage everyone to do the Sheva Mitzvahs. We should try to influence society to make it as moral as possible. Yeah?
If one is eating at a friend's or relative's house on Shabbos, and he knows the food is kosher, but it might have been cooked on Shabbos or...
That's not kosher. If it was cooked on Shabbos, it's not kosher. Sorry, what? Pots. Yeah. And when you're eating in someone's house, it's worse than when you're eating in a restaurant. In a restaurant, there's all kinds of things, so it's a house that's really worse. I would try and eat the things where there's less of an issue with it. There's also a difference between, when you talk cooked on Shabbos, the difference between someone who goes and cooks food on Shabbos and, you know, different platas. You have to find out exactly what you're worried about. You have to be a Talmud Chacham to eat at people's houses. You understand what I'm saying? So I would do my best to try and anticipate. There are just so many different issues you have to ask about and understand, you know, what can rely or not, right? I would try and do my best to estimate the reality and then ask, you know, a rabbi with the details of what the reality is. Is the reality that the stuff is being taken out of the fridge and putting on the hot plate? Is the reality stuff is left in the oven rather than turning on the flame, leaving on the flame? You know what I'm saying? There's so many different... Yeah. Cher, what do you got?
Are you going to download movies?
You mean rights, copyright rights.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly, Dina de Malchuta Dina, right? Dina de Malchuta Dina, not allowed to steal, right? One has to clarify what the dinim are with each of these things, right? The dinim, I think, are not always clear. Sometimes it's clear and then it's us, right? But, you know, sometimes it's a matter of clarifying exactly what the real din is. And I think we're living in a time period where a lot of this is fluid. What I mean by fluid is the laws are catching up with a lot of the realities of the internet. But definitely if it's a matter of paying $2.99 a month and getting, you know, movies the right way versus saving $2.99 and, you know, it's worth the $2.99 to avoid it. Now keep in mind that beyond Dina de Malchus Adina, when you're dealing with Jews, there's even bigger problems. With Goyim also there's the Isur Exela, but we're even more mocked in certain areas that maybe, you know, if it's a minhag or accepted with Goyim, so with Jewish people, it's even more, you have to be even more careful.
Also, does it apply to taking a picture of a sefer that you don't want to buy? They borrow a friend's clothes. And
that's part of the din question you have to check, right? I think it is legal to take a picture of a sefer and use it, right? Despite what sometimes is written. Maybe I'm wrong about the legal issues. You have to check. I don't know, right? I'm not a master of international law, right? I know you assumed I was. I'm not. Yes? I meant because of shimashe, etc. Many people are more makel on pictures than on sculpting. It's not real in 3D, etc. Actually, I wouldn't put it on my wall and bow down to it. And definitely you can take a picture of the sunset where it's not the sun. Right, it's the sun, the body of the sun. I think it's hard to get a real picture of the sun. Yeah?
What's your opinion of Rabbi Kahana's view on putting Arabs here at the show?
What was his view?
That we should basically remove the Arabs from the show.
I think, if I understand correctly, his point was that if you want to live in this country, like any other country, you have to be loyal to the country. This is a Jewish country. If you're fighting against the country, you need to leave. I think he felt we should encourage Arabs to move, financial stipends. I don't think he was for forcing Arabs out of Israel. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think, again, there are political, strategic questions about how to work with the rest of the world, but a country definitely has a right, and I think a responsibility, to remove people trying to undermine the country. You know what I'm saying? Okay, does it work internationally, politically, strategically? Those are different questions. And the real issue with Meir Kahana is that many things he said, it's not that people disagreed with him in principle, they disagreed with him sense-wise. You know, you can't do that, you know, etc. You can't be international, you can't make it in the world that way. Which is a strategic question. But in principle, does a country have a right to remove people who are trying to, you know, take it apart? For sure, right? Does the country have a right to try and inspire people to leave? For sure, right? Yeah.
In England, you find this a lot. The people are very motivated to have kosher meat and to have kedim for the kosher, but they'll have non-kosher cheese, etc.
In
their house, and they'll have it. But all of the meat stuff will be entirely kosher. They'll have separate plates, etc.
Okay.
Would it be must to eat meat at such a person's house?
Why wouldn't it be?
And in Mars Island, maybe.
People are you eating meat? The question I would ask is this: a person who, if it's just amaratus.
No, people who know.
If it's Amrath, but if they know and they don't care, so then I wonder what other things they're not caring about. You understand what I'm trying to say? Meaning, if a person knows and doesn't care, so are they being mocked on 100 other issues which you have to be careful about? That's the real question. I don't know. Could be. A person just doesn't know. They think the cheese is kosher, and they're very frumi, and they're making a toast. Right? Okay. Yeah.
What if talking about before, if you go to someone's house and eat and you're not sure if everything
will be okay, I remember.
Yeah. What if it is your family or your grandparents or something that you're not sure if it's kosher?
Obviously then it's weighing between how to balance different things. The first thing you gotta know is exactly what the issue is. Clearly one wouldn't go to their grandparents and eat chazer. Right? On the other hand, a person would definitely not cut off the relationship with their grandparents because they don't use the most kosher or blech, with the chumrah of Eitan Phillips, right? Either or both Eitan Phillips's. So now we have to see exactly what kind of issue it is and exactly what the sensitivities are and how to do it in a way and to know, am I being insulted? They won't be insulted. You know what I'm saying? It becomes a sensitivity question and the balance question. I'm not trying to avoid the question, but it just depends a lot on the details. Yeah?
Can you hug your grandmother?
Can you? I assume no one could stop you. May you hug your grandmother? May you?
Sure.
I think one should definitely hug their grandmother.
Yeah, but
I remember
hearing that you're not allowed to hug your cousins,
and
so I wasn't sure where the cutoff line
is. I think grandmother is your own mother. It's a different kind of thing. And cousins, it's a different thing. People marry cousins. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, no? Yes, Adam, what do you got?
What do you think about supporting and even attending non-denominational conferences or events such as the Limburg Conference in England or other
What's sporting? Because he asked me about sporting, then he asked me about a conference. Sporting means
supporting.
Going to a...
Supporting!
Oh. didn't it sound like you said sporting?
Yeah.
I had one disc in and then all of a sudden you flipped on me there. Look, there's a lot of political... I say political, I don't mean evil. I just mean, considerations you have to take into account. And it's not just what's good for you. It's... there's two levels. There's what's good for you as a person. There's what impact you have by going or supporting a conference. I think if I'm understanding the issue correctly, and you know, correct me if I'm not understanding the issue correctly, the Limud conference or conferences like that are very good for Jews who don't have real things in their lives. And so isn't that great that there's a conference where Jews who don't ever study Judaism or study very little are exposed to things that... Yeah.
I didn't mean for us, I meant for like rabbis attending too. Rabbis working alongside.
I'm going there. Right, I'm saying, you know, on the one hand, it's a great thing for people in the community who don't have exposure to Torah and Torah values. On the other hand, as far as Orthodox people, it's a wonderful thing that we have a sense of oneness. On the other hand, it's a very bad thing for there to be an implication that this is true Judaism, you know, some of the stuff that goes on. And number two, it's a very bad thing for people to be exposed to apikorsis and undermining opinions. And I know they're out there, but there's no mitzvah to go and expose yourself to it. So, you know, now the question is, how do you balance those things? We definitely have to be very, very careful not to imply that this is Judaism, and not to facilitate a situation where frum people are going and being corrupted. So now the question becomes, okay, how do you do that? How do you try and get the maximum support and achdus with the minimum damage? And how much achdus is worth how much damage? Now again, you know, it may be easy for Ruvain Tarragon to say and harder for a shul rabbi to say, but the real answer is the Reform people should go and the Orthodox people should stay home. Or have an alternative conference where they're exposed to things that are frum. And some of the stories I read where, you know, congregants, you know, rabbis hear congregants say things that are, you know, apikorsis, where they obviously picked up there. That's a sad, sad thing. You know what I'm saying? So again, there is something beautiful about being together, and you wish that could be done as often as possible, but not in a way where, A, frum people are, you know, the fact that non-frum people are getting the wrong impression, okay, non-frum people, they're not frum, you know what I'm saying? But that frum people, and even for the non-frum people, that they're getting an impression that this is legitimate Judaism, now how much does it make a difference? But for frum people, that's a terrible thing, right? So there's a real dilemma. So I understand on the one hand why the chief rabbi might dafka want to be involved, because he wants to be, you know, seen, not for his own gaiva, but he wants to be seen, everyone's rabbi, so he can impact. On the other hand, I can understand why congregation rabbis want to make sure that people aren't misunderstanding and being led astray into the world of relativism. Understand what I'm saying? And it's not like the strength of the frum community, the modern community, because the Stanford Hill, they don't care. It's not like the strength of the modern frum community is knowing where to draw the lines and having a strong Judaism. They're weak. People are weak. And we need to be on guard. The problem with the Orthodox community in England and America is not that they're too extreme. I'm talking about the modern Orthodox community and too strong in their Judaism. The fluffy, floppy, woofy, waffy, that's the problem, right? Yeah, who's next? Ah, oh, Brick! Birthday boy. I think ants are like cousins.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ants are like cousins. Ideally. I don't think it's not Yorg Val Yavar. You know what I'm saying? Ideally. Grandmother's your mother's mother. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also asking, but did you know that not, let's say, hugging or kissing your aunt or great aunt would...
I wouldn't make a deal out of it. I would be passive. I have an aunt who makes a point every time she's in Israel, she comes into the Kotel Beis Medrash and gives me a big hug and kiss and wants everyone to see. Next time she comes, please see very quickly so she can stop. Yes. Yeah.
There's an issue of inviting non-Jewish guests around on Yom Tov.
Yes.
Is there room to make or in the situation where you have a family member who is in a relationship with children with someone who is non-Jewish?
That's a more strategic personal question. Yeah.
On a halakhic basis, is there anti mekul on that?
I think under certain circumstances, yes. Yeah.
At a sports game, is it okay to move up to more expensive seats?
You move down.
Right.
Technically. Unless you mean to the boxes on the top. Let me understand correctly. Is it something that's well accepted, even though they try and stop you? I don't know, I think so. I mean, you know, like, let's say you're in a stadium, you bought a ticket, and you went and sat down in a low seat and they caught you, but they wouldn't throw you out, they wouldn't take your ticket and put you in jail, right? Just send you back up, right?
What if it doesn't involve getting past someone, just if it's a more expensive seat that's not yet in that area where it's blocked?
I mean, not in New York, where they rely that people aren't going to go sit there.
Right.
So then, it's a lochasa, right? I think it should be okay unless I'm missing something, what?
There's some graffiti on the way to the ship that says Darth Harris Covenant Torah. And a few days ago, I noticed someone wrote a response that said, "Im ein Torah, ein Darth Harris." What do you think about that?
What's the question?
What do you think of the statement, "Im ein Torah, ein Darth Harris"?
I'm saying, what's the question? So, you mean to ask me this? Are you asking me how could it be Derech Eretz Kadmon Torah if it also says Ein Derech Eretz Ein Torah? Which Ein Torah Ein Derech Eretz? Which way does it go? That's the question you're asking. First of all, the Mishnah writes both Ein Torah Ein Derech Eretz Ein Derech Eretz Ein Torah, which I don't understand. What the Mishnah is trying to tell you is that one without the other is incomplete. And what most explains another Mishnah which says, you know, if you don't have Yerushalayim, you can't learn Torah. But if you don't learn Torah, you don't get Yerushalayim. So I don't understand. You know, so the answer is you have to have a basic level of Yerushalayim in order to take in Torah properly. Obviously, higher levels of Yerushim, you reach as you learn Torah. Derech Eretz also, if a person lacks total Derech Eretz, so his Torah is meaningless. But obviously, real Derech Eretz, a person arrives at from learning Torah, right? And Derech Eretz without Torah, where it's just Derech Eretz without Torah, also doesn't mean very much.
Why does it mean very much?
Why does what mean much?
Why
does Derech Eretz not mean much without Torah? Because it could be you act nicely and morally, etc. But as a person, you're a disgusting person. You just don't hurt other people. So that's not life. And the truth is, you may even be someone who, you know, respects other people in certain ways, but isn't a caring person about other people in truth. Give me a few examples. Who didn't go yet? Ah, Danny Cohen.
What's your opinion on instituting the death penalty in Israel?
I think they should have the death penalty for murderers. Let's take a step back. The question is, let's take a step back. There's two ways you could ask the question. One is halachically, mutar or asr, and the other is what's right under the circumstances. So there is a question, what circumstances can Beis Din kill, and who can kill, and who can't kill, right? And which also gets into what kind of power does the state of Israel have? So you can say the state of Israel isn't firm, so they can't go to war. What does that mean? I think the bottom line is that the people responsible for the society have the responsibility to protect society. And murder, for sure, terrorism, are very dangerous things. And so I think under these circumstances, I think they need to do the things to protect society. Now, Judaism is very sensitive about death and life and killing and etc. And for sure, after the Holocaust, which is when all those things started. And I think that has to be done in a very careful way. But if we're in circumstances where people take advantage of the system because they're not going to be killed, which is definitely the circumstance we're in, we have to protect ourselves. Situations where murderers, you know, terrorists go free is a terrible, terrible thing. And the fact that they're not killed is part of the reason why we're stuck in what we're stuck in. Yeah.
Which is ideal? I mean, no. More or less.
Yeah.
More or less ideal is what I mean.
You're going to tell me what you're asking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not like a Jeopardy.
No.
More or less ideal.
No, I probably your word's going to marry a shiksa, so you tell him to hang out with the Hillel girls. But if you hang out with the Hillel girls, you're going to be bowling Nido. What's...
I think that ultimately we have to look at the bigger picture of people staying within the Jewish people. We don't look at the narrow situation of a particular cheder mitzvah. Want people to stay within the Jewish people. Yes.
Why is Natan Slifkin controversial, and what is controversial about him?
Controversial, you know, different people are controversial about different things.
What was he preparing for, and why?
If I'm not mistaken, he said different things. He said things about animals and about the world that are different than Chazal's opinion about it. Did I get it right?
Some of his stuff.
Some of his stuff. I didn't mean everything. I didn't mean that. He didn't mean Muslim. He went to look. We're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You heard? He said things about history of animals and an age of the world that are different than the traditionally accepted opinion. Yes?
If the toilet in your bathroom is separate from the actual bathroom, but the shower is part of the main bathroom, can you, like, say you can tell you're in that sink in the bathroom?
You mean like in yeshiva?
Yeah.
I think we say here it's okay. That's why we have long doors, am I right? Anyone heard otherwise?
Even there's like a little window that connects the toilet to the main bathroom.
I think little windows is not a problem. We machmir, go out to the other room, we go, we machmir. I don't even want to be in a place where the mindset is. But I think that's why we have long doors. And I'm talking about long, you ever notice yeshiva bathroom doors are very long? Mm-hmm. I think that's why they go low. Yeah.
What does it mean for us to be an Orla Goyim, especially because we're not, it's us going to teach them Torah?
We should be a representation of how to live life on the highest level. And we should try and get people to live life on the highest level. And you can do that without teaching people Torah. Teach people ideas. Give people direction. Yes?
Is an opinion contrary to traditional opinions by default a wrong opinion?
Well, first of all, everything has some truth to it, right? It's a matter of how truthful and how forceful, right? We definitely feel Judaism is right, so things that are anti-Judaism would be less right.
Within Judaism.
Within Judaism. Machloket. That you mean machloket?
No, but machloket from people being chelek on people a lot earlier before. As in, it's not actually people arguing about it together.
You're asking me whether later generations have a right to disagree with earlier generations? Definitely later generations can disagree with earlier generations. What generally happens is there comes to a certain point in time where later generations feel too small to disagree with those who came before them. Now, sometimes it happens in mass, sometimes it happens individually. There are many people in this generation who feel they would disagree with people in this generation, right? It's a subjective thing and a psychological thing. And sometimes it happens in mass. That's when we talk about the change of a period, right? You know, the Gemara says that Rav, there's a question of Rav, Rav was Tanu Palak. What does that mean? It means nobody told him that he wasn't allowed to disagree. He still saw himself as someone who could disagree with those who came before him. Most of the other people in his time didn't see themselves that way anymore. Oh! Yes?
What did you mean before? Can you clarify what you meant before when you said things are only less right, but they're not necessarily wrong? Like, if some people out there that there isn't a God, they are completely less right than us? Or
they're wrong in their point about there being no God. But every idea has something to learn from it.
What do you learn from that idea?
I'd have to get a better understanding of the idea and what they're saying, right? Could be something about the importance of people feeling responsible for their own actions. Sometimes, you know, a person may mean by that the point that we are responsible for things, which is an important idea. The statement is wrong, but the idea has some basis to it or it couldn't exist. Yes?
I'm really excited that you can listen to a shiur in the shower.
Shear of Torah in the shower. I don't know. I don't ask him. Yeah.
If the term Baal Tshuva generally denotes that somebody didn't used to be Shomer Torah Mitzvot, then is it mutter to say something Baal Tshuva or Lashon
Hara? I think the context is very important.
Yeah, if it's in a good way.
If it's in a positive context, you have to be careful of Avak Lashon Hara, which is when you say something positive, it's taken negatively. I think saying someone is a Baal Tshuva is a big shevach, right? Sometimes Baal Tshuva, I said, I hope I am too, right? But obviously you want to say everything, you want to say in a way that it's going to be perceived positively, right? You want to say negative things about people. Yes?
Is flossing asur on Shabbat because you make yourself bleed?
I think so, no? Am I wrong? I think so. Meaning, well, let's take a step back. Dav Shem is Kavin, so it should be mutter, right? If you do something that, right? The only problem is that's a psik reshe, right? So you have to know if your flossing is a psik reshe. If it's a psik reshe, is lo nichale. It's lo nichale. That result is lo nichale. But the question is daraisa, derabanan. Sounds like, I mean, I don't do it. That's why I've never thought of it. I don't floss in principle. I'm a man. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying the dental, you know, now I'm going to get all these dental emails. What are you talking about? Flossing is very important. I'm a man from the 20th century. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? We don't floss. Something else is going to kill me. It's not going to be flossing, you know? I don't floss, ever. But, let's see, you know, so I never thought of it. Should be a psik reshe, lo nichle l'chora, right? What am I missing? Am I missing anything? What?
Why is it a psik reshe?
It's even more, it's even more kala. It's not a psik reshe. It's not a psik reshe. It's Gavin, right?
Depends on your gums.
Yeah, so I would say bak mitzvah for health, you know, health. Psikvejl nichle in and of itself is a machlokas. So the question is here, it would be a machlokas. It's not makom mitzvah, it's not makom tzar. I don't know. Ask people to floss. I assume they would say better to do it not on Shabbos. If anyone gets a different answer, And any question like that, you can send me. I'll take a look at my own afterwards. You know, like I'll talk to people with flaws. So whoever asked that question, if someone else wants to send me an email with that question, I'll take a look for an exact answer. Questions I've never heard and don't do, so I don't know. Yeah.
Similarly, when it comes to brushing, generally you wouldn't bleed.
Brushing. So brushing without toothpaste, like with water, that's okay. Most hold. With toothpaste, it's a machlok, it's better not to do it. To have the liquid ones, those are okay.
What would be the issue with the...
Memachik. Yeah.
If, like, during the winter, your hands get very dry, they might come to bleed on Shabbos, is it okay to put on lotion to prevent from bleeding, even though putting on lotion that you...
Like this. You know, go like this. You can go like this. Dab it. Not this. Yeah.
If Kli Shlishi in Kosh Halacha does not Mavasha, but then you do actually Mavasha with it, as in,
what does that mean?
As in halachically, it's in the third.
So that means you're not being Mavasha with it.
But Kisa halachically, you're not, but you're still cooking something.
Well, I don't know what that means. It means it's not halachic cooking, so it's mutter. Yeah.
What do you do come lunch on Shabbos and you realize, you know, like.
Unless they're going to make a gzera, they're going to make a rabbana. Yeah.
What do you do? Like, come what's it, lunch on Shabbos? You realize, you know, you had such a good time with your bread last night, you ate all of it, you don't have any bread more.
Shabbos lunch, you have no bread for amot. Theoretical question.
Yeah.
Well, I would try and get bread from somebody else.
You can't.
You have a meal without bread. What's the question? You hang yourself from the ceiling as penitence. I don't know what anybody asked. Someone else who didn't have a chance. Yes. Avi, yeah. Yeah. Because some people hold that there are things that are called Kali Bishel that cook even in a Kli Shlishi. There are things called Kali Bishel. Every rule has an exception, right? Question? Everyone agrees that it's in Kali Bishel and Kli Sheni. Question is, do Kali Bishel apply in a Kli Shlishi? That's my question. Yeah.
What do you think the biggest problems are today facing Israel?
The biggest problems... isn't the biggest problem that there are so many Jews who aren't religious and are assimilating? How can anyone say anything else? No. I mean, second problem is that Tottenham isn't playing well this year. That, you know, they are. That's also a problem. What? What does it mean? Is a Manchester boy talking? For them to have one win means they're doing very well. What? What a reaction should be. We should do whatever we can to try and impact.
What do you personally think?
What can be done? Yeah. Different people do different things. You know, there's all kinds of things. I don't think there's one answer to that question. You know, some people start big kiruv movements. Some people talk to their neighbors. Some people, right? Some people put videos online. Some people, you know, all good. I imagine in general, like most things in life, it isn't one thing that's going to solve problems. The world is very particularistic, and people for sure are particular, right? Different people reach out, and any amount you impact, even if it's not keeping someone from assimilating, making someone a little bit better is worthwhile. It's not all or nothing, right? But you know what? The very important thing is a lot of people in Baruch Hashem and Yeshivat HaKol for sure, people, they want to make a difference, they want to make a change, they appreciate their problems. First, you have to make sure that you are someone who is great and not going to lose yourself in the struggle, and that what you're being makar of them to is the right thing. I'm talking about you now. I've seen so many people go out there on a mission. They're more lost than the people they're bringing back. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah.
Why is Pirkei Avot generally referred to? Why isn't it called Masechet Avot?
You want to know why it's called Pirkei Avot?
Yeah.
Because there's a custom to read it the weeks between Pesach and Shavuos, a perek each week. So we call it Pirkei Avot because we read a perek each week. Yes.
Well, you said, Dandy, before about the bread thing. You said you should get some bread from someone else.
I said hang from the ceiling for penitence.
Before you said that.
Yeah, okay.
Before you said there's no bread. Is that not like you know, Shabbat? What's the...
They should lend it to you, not to give it to you. You're using their bread. Can I use your bread?
What in general halachas of Kenyan
Shabbat? Don't make a Kenyan. Can I use your bread? No Kenyan. I'm not borrowing it. I'm not renting it. Can I use your bread? Yes.
If someone makes you a cup of tea on Shabbos and you don't know if it's kishis, say it or not.
Can you drink it? Can you drink it? Let's go this way. Iri from a Kli Rishon is not good. If there's a chance that it was taken right out of the Kli Rishon and put onto the tea bag, you understand what I'm saying? That's not so good. If there's a chance that was done, I would try and avoid that. But if it's a cliche-y, I think there's enough to be make a one. You understand what I'm saying?
Could mean the water was put first and then the tea bag.
Right. Yes. Danikov's chus is that people, if they don't know what they're doing, there's no Danikov's chus, you know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? Give me Danikov's chus that an American knows how to play football. No, it's stupid, you know what I'm saying? I don't know what they're doing. Yes, Rony. Rony didn't go yet, yeah.
Can you do a census directly on your
son? Can you, or should you, or may you?
Is it or how left?
Can you, it's mutter. Tzitzis have no kedusha to them. First of all, can you? You can. I mean, you know, you can go right out afterwards. May you? Yes. There's no kedusha to tzitzis. Should you? That's a personal question about you can get smelly, not get smelly. Da, da, da. There's no kedusha to tzitzis. When you finish them ikra, then you can throw them in the garbage can. So we throw them out in a bag, nicer. Da, da, da. It's not kedusha. That's filling. Right? We didn't go yet. Oh, I'm younger.
What do you think about switching your father's minhag, like Rav Moshe says about standing and sitting during Kiddush on Friday night?
Why would you not want to continue your father's minhag? Because Rav Moshe says you should sit.
Yeah.
I would follow the minhag. A lot of chashuv Jews who stand. Yeah. Hey, Tan.
That's 3 hours between
me and... Is it your minhag?
Yes.
So what's the question? That's a tough thing to say. I don't know. I mean, these are minhagim, so it's not a halachic basis. There's minhag basis. I know. I can search for you if you want. You send me an email. I'll search up and find basis. You know, so maybe, maybe not. It's not my minhag, so I've never, you know. It's kind of like flossing. Yes.
What do you think the best proof is for the validity of rabbinic Judaism?
Rabbinic Judaism?
As opposed to like Karaite Judaism or...
You mean, because it means a lot of things to a lot of people. You mean the idea of Torah Shabbat Peh?
Not just that, but the fact that rabbis enact laws and make zeros and...
Torah Shabbat Peh. Okay. Meaning the Mesorah of Torah Shabbat Peh, the creative role of Torah Shabbat Peh. I think the best proof is that the system seems to include it. The system itself seems to include it. Seems to assume that it's going on. The system itself can't stand on its own. The best proof is that the Karaites themselves ended up making their own Torah Shabbat Peh. Because the system itself depends upon it. I mean, that's the best proof. And I'll tell you what does it for me. It may not be the best proof. The Jewish people and the eternal, continuing Jewish people have made this assumption. And the greatest minds and most dedicated over the Hashem have made that assumption. So when I get upstairs, if God's going to say, you idiot, you relied on Torah Shabbat Peh, I'm saying, what do you want from me, the Grah, or Moshe Feinstein? Every go to Ladar. Now, I mean, any serious Jew didn't. What do you want from me? You know what I'm saying? So I think I'm safe. On the other hand, if you get up there and you got, how come you didn't keep any halachos? Well, I don't know how Torah Shabbat Peh. Every righteous Jew is doing it. You know better than them. I don't have an answer for that one. So I figure this is the safe bet. That's what I'm trying to say. I think too often people are dealing with, you know, right, wrong, as opposed to, what does God expect from me today? Yeah?
What is the nature of Halacha Torah Moshe Misina?
What is the nature of Halacha Moshe Misina? What does that mean?
Meaning, is it that, you know, you could take it as like a, like God is writing, and he goes, right, Moshe, stop writing, here's Halacha, right, keep writing. Or is it the minhag that the Jews did?
Moshe wasn't writing at Har Sinai, just for the record.
Well, how
God told Moshe many things that were not going to be included in the book that were meant to be Mesoros. Why they weren't included in the book, that's a good question, etc. But that's what it means. Moshe Misina. Who didn't go? Who didn't get Daniel, Safin, you want to ask another question?
It's a matter of... embarrassing somebody to prevent them from drinking tea from a clean from one of first to clean kalim.
Well, the kli sheni, I think you can be so mech, but kli rishon, I would try and find a way not to embarrass them. Yes.
Does Judaism believe in separation of church and state?
Depends what you mean by the separation of church and state. Does Judaism believe that Beis Din have the right and the responsibility to force people to do the right things? Yes. So now the question is, what exactly you mean by that? Does Judaism believe in our day that we should try and take control and force and do and what the circumstances? Those are different questions. But Judaism doesn't have the right and responsibility within the way the world, the Torah, right? That's what it says. Yes.
Back to the Hill's question when it comes to the Mishra Yisina, do you regard it as a, is it considered as a halacha midoraisa or midorabanan in terms of...
Halacha Mishra Yisina has the weight of a midoraisa. Maybe not for Moshe Bava Omer, you know, those technical, but...
Maybe we can make tachanas so that to prevent us from doing all those Mishra Yisina? Mishmisinas?
We definitely try to protect Halacha Moshe Mishmisinas.
I'm saying, but it's like Rabbanans that are Takanas that we don't go over a Deraisa, we're not supposed to make a Takana on that also. So
it's like Halacha Deraisa. Mm-hmm. Chaim Shulman.
I'm told the Mishnah Berurah says that it's a proper count that everybody should wear like a Talis Gadol.
So the Mishnah Berurah says that everyone should wear a Talis Gadol. Yeah, okay.
When you daven and stuff. So
when you daven. You want to know why the Ashkenazi minhag is that people don't wear talis until they're married?
Yeah.
Some people just, you know, feel otherwise. Minhag Yisrael. That's what we do. Minhag Yisrael. You want to know why they don't wear talis gadol until they get married? They're feeling they're ready, they're not ready, you know. That's the minhag. There are all kinds of deos that are not what become minhag Yisrael, right? You with me? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you think it'll positively impact, like encourage your kid to be more involved in davening, if he wears talis from a young age, you will let
that. Definitely mutter. It's mutter. Yeah, I think it's okay. Especially it's what to rely upon. Meaning, one of the themes that I want to say here is Judaism is not always about what's right. We have a Mesorah. It doesn't mean that if the Mesorah is crazy and anti-halachic and whatever, that's one thing. But we have a Mesorah, which is the most powerful part of Judaism, which is what you receive from the earlier generations. And the question is not what, you know, Klape Shmaya Galia turns out to be, but what Hashem expects from us. Hashem does not expect from us to do, societal research into speaking patterns of the 16th century. And He doesn't expect us to go against everything our parents have given us, or etc. Right? He expects us to be a link in a chain of the Jews. And the question is, do we respect the generation? If we don't respect the generations that come from before us, we have nothing. That's a very important thing. Last question. So I want you to think about whether their question is the last question material. We have two people. Okay, yes.
If embarrassing someone is like killing them, surely it should be.
What?
If embarrassing someone is like killing them, then it should be done for everything except for the three.
It's not like killing them. It's
considered
equated to a certain extent.
So surely the whole Yom Shabbat thing.
It's not Yahrig Valyavar to embarrass someone.
Not Yahrig Valyavar.
No. The Gemara doesn't say you should actually throw yourself into a furnace instead of embarrassing someone. It says it should be easier to you. You should try and do it in a sensitive way. Yes!
That's all the same to what they ask you when you're upstairs. They ask you whether you indulged in this world.
Whether you indulged in the pleasures of this world?
The permitted pleasures. I thought there was one year someone said that.
Now, there's a Yerushalmi which says that a person has to make a cheshbin for all the things they didn't take advantage of.
Oh, yeah. Right. So, is it more moral to not eat meat, or do you have to be cautious for that?
There are different reasons people don't eat meat. Some of them are very legitimate. For example, health. If you feel that it's healthier, so that's a good cheshbin. Why didn't I eat meat? I felt it was healthier. You feel tzar b'lechaim. Tzar b'lechaim is a good reason, right? So there are many good reasons why not to eat meat. I'm not saying you have to not eat meat. A person has a cheshbon. Why didn't you eat meat? Because I felt bad for the animals that were suffering. I wanted to help them avoid their suffering. Okay, good answer. Yeah. Is there a reason dafka to eat meat? Well, I think a person could and should enjoy God's world, right? And there are definitely times when it's a mitzvah too. I don't think you have to, but it's a kiyum mitzvah. Okay, Mariv, v'hu rachum, downstairs.